Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle Radio. Each week, the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in finance take you beyond the numbers and hype, right to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, we're discussing the 30th edition of the UBS Reserve Managers Seminar. The RMS and accompanying survey is one of the most authoritative depictions of official reserve management activities available, and includes the views of around 40 central banks covering geopolitics, currencies, asset allocation, and this year, reform of financial infrastructure. Today on the show, we'll discover why central banks are broadly positive about the global outlook. We'll hear why, in terms of risk, geopolitics remains the main concern. Why more than half believe that there will be a shift towards multipolar currency system in the next 5 years. And in a special section on the 80th anniversary of Bretton Woods, we'll hear why more than 60% believe that global financial architecture is obsolete without reforms. Here to unpack all of that and more for us, we welcome back to the show Massimiliano Castelli. Max is head of strategy and advice in the global sovereign market team at UBS Asset Management, which serves sovereign institutions globally. Also with him is his colleague Philip Salmon, director of strategy and advice, global sovereign markets, UBS. Philip works for Max and is in charge of the survey. Max, Philip, great to have you both with us, and always a pleasure to discuss the UBS RMS with our friends in UBS. Now, obviously, UBS hosted just towards the end of last month officials from central banks, from sovereign institutions in Wolfsburg in Switzerland, of course. The 30th edition, I think I'm right in saying, and you had more than 70 officials there. It's one of the longest private sector sponsored for these kinds of institutions. Give us a sense, Max. You sort of preside over it. What's the secret of the ongoing success of this format?
Yeah, actually, in the private sector, having an event running for 30 years is quite rare because, as you know, things change a lot and very fast. But we are very proud of it. And I believe that the reason why the secret of this success is actually that this event has been evolving through time and reflecting what really matters for central banks. Every year, we spend a lot of time to ensure that the agenda of the event reflects basically the topics that really matter, particularly for a reserve manager. Also, I think the fact that the event has been running for so long really matters. It's very interesting. This year, which was the anniversary, the 30th anniversary, I look back at the participant over the last three decades, and I was surprised to see many names of official who participated maybe 20 years ago as senior official from this institution, and nowadays they are governors or they are at a very high level in this institution. And also, I think the secret as well has been that we never stop running this event. I remember very well during COVID, when we were not able to run it in person, we continue holding this event virtually. We also ran this event during good and bad times, when also the market were particularly stressed. Think about the time of the great financial crisis, or even when it was a bad time for UBS, during the period when UBS was not doing great. So I think that's definitely the two main reasons. Finally, I would say it's also a little bit a reflection of the way we are organized at UBS Asset Management as far as this client segment is concerned. We are one of the few, is not the only asset manager who really have a dedicated team to these institutions, central banks and sovereign wealth funds. And we also have a team, the one that I had, which is in charge basically of advising sovereign institutions on a broad range of issues which could go well beyond the pure management of assets. Economic and financial outlook, strategic asset allocation advice, tactical asset allocation, and any other issue which at the moment is important for central banks.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. As you said, that longevity is really striking and most impressive. Let's talk a little bit about what was under discussion at the conference. Of course, you presented the results of the survey that you, Max, and your colleagues, like Philip, carried out prior to the event. Just give us a few headlines. What are some of the key takeaways from this year's survey?
Absolutely. I would say, let me mention four, which I think are very important. First of all, is the fact that there is quite optimism on the basis of the results of the survey about the global economic outlook. Basically, more than two-thirds of the respondents to the survey believe that we are in a soft landing scenario, and only 11% believe that the US will suffer a recession anytime soon. Just to put things into perspective, in last year's survey, the percentage of those of the respondents who believe that the US would fall in a recession because of the hiking interest rates was actually much higher. And this soft landing scenario is basically based on two beliefs. First of all, that growth, global growth, will moderate somewhat, but will remain positive. So I would stress here the fact that the central bank's officials themselves believe that there is a resilience in the global economy. And also when we turn to inflation, their view is that inflation will continue falling, maybe will remain for a little bit longer above target, but ultimately could close very close to target in the course of 2025. So a positive view about the economic and financial outlook. Second is about the geopolitics. Geopolitics is definitely the top concern among the central bank's officials. It was the same as last year. Just this is very important. Geopolitics is definitely the topic of conversation that we are having with the majority of our clients, not only at the seminar, but in general when we interact with them. And the geopolitics has been discussed at length at the conference. I'm sure we can go back and discuss a little bit more in detail exactly what type of geopolitical concern. The third one is about the way that basically central banks manage foreign exchange reserve. Just as a reminder for our listener, these institutions manage more than $10 trillion of the reserve. So it's a very important institutional client segment. And of course, these institutions have been hit by the volatility that we had in 2022 and 2023 because of the increase in interest rates. So we were wondering when we ran the survey whether the long-term diversification trends that we observe over the last two decades would continue in the current environment. And actually, after a pause, I would say that we had in 2022 and 2023, we see that this diversification trend is resuming. So basically, central banks have become a much more diversified investor, and they learn the benefit of diversification over the long term. But of course, this diversification is evolving, and it's not just about searching for better return, but it is also about having a portfolio which is more resilient across different states of the world, also to reflect the uncertainty that we still have, particularly at the geopolitical level. Then I would like to mention the four main takeaway of the survey is that we see a growing interest of central banks for green bonds, which is something remarkable because I would say that we are in a phase where we see maybe a little bit of a slowdown because of the environment we are in the sort of, if you want, in the sustainability trends or a consolidation phase. Central banks, which have been particularly active in this area, they are continuing to focus on incorporating sustainability, in particular climate change issues, in their investment framework. Last but not least is the growing interest of central banks for gold. It's something that has been going on for quite a few years now. I think it is a reflection of the geopolitical environment we are in, but this is definitely a trend which has been discussed at length at the conference.
Yeah, interesting stuff, Max. Tell me a little bit about what the central bank officials, you know, all of these senior figures gathered, so interesting to get their insights. What were they talking about, particularly if we look at the outlook? Let's talk about monetary policy. I don't know, was there broad agreement? What kinds of things were you and your colleagues hearing?
Yeah, every year when we pull together the agenda, each day is dedicated to a different topic, for instance, economic and financial outlook, the first day. And then we have one of the days is what we call the governor's day, where we have the opportunity of having either a governor in office or ex-governor. And this year we had actually quite a very high level of officials discussing the monetary policy. This, of course, was a great opportunity to reflect a little bit more in depth about basically what central banks have been doing over the last 3 years to fight inflation, and also thinking about what comes next. And I think I would say, if I can summarize, that central banks definitely share the view that they, I would say, largely succeed in putting inflation expectation under control and putting inflation under control. Also, at the same time, avoiding a recession. So they've been able, if you want, to manage what we call a soft landing, which is basically putting inflation under control, but without pushing the economy, the global economy, in particular the US economy, but globally, we can make the same observation to put this economy in recession. In the past, normally, when you have to fight such a level of inflation, most of the times economies suffer a recession because of the impact of a higher interest rate. So that's the first important point, which I think sometimes we tend to forget, but it was not an easy, it was something which I was not given for granted 1 year ago. At the same time, there is, however, a debate about what was exactly the nature of this inflation shock. Actually, we had a very nice debate with the two economists, one from UBS and another one from outside, and they were championing two different views about inflation. One is the transitory story, basically that inflation was largely an effect of certain shocks, COVID before, earlier on, and then the Ukraine conflict. And another one instead, which is still there, which is instead is a more structural view about inflation, which is instead saying that what we saw in the last few years is just the beginning of a long term, driven by more structural factor, like, for instance, demography or deglobalization, rising public debts, etc. That's very important because depending on how what is the view that you have about the nature of the inflation shock, then you can think about, first of all, what was the effect of the monetary policy action which has been undertaken by central banks, and at the same time, what would be the right way going forward. And I think the jury is still out. I believe that central banks are more inclined to think about the transitory nature of the inflation shock of the last few years. But at the same time, they are very much, of course, focused on the structural factors which are at play. And for instance, deglobalization, fragmentation, protectionism are definitely, and demography are definitely factors which are being looked at very closely by governors and by central banks officials. Another key question we debated at the conference was whether central banks have fallen behind the curve. You hear very often there is a view that central banks were too late in raising interest rates when inflation starts rising, and at the same time, they might be too late now to lower interest rates as inflation is following. I think there was a very lively debate on that. We should not forget how complicated was the situation post-COVID and with the Ukraine conflict for central banks. Some governors presented their views about why they acted with that timing. And I believe it's fair to say that there is definitely a debate going on among them. And I was actually as well after the conference in Basel at the BIS annual gathering, they are starting to reflect on what is the best way forward. And I think, if I may say so, there are two main views on that. First of all, central banks definitely, they want to avoid to make the mistake of lowering interest rate too soon, because this could raise the risk that inflation start rising again. And this, of course, it would be a big blow to their credibility. So I think they are really looking very closely to be really sure that inflation is definitely under control. But at the same time, there was also a debate about the need for flexibility. You need to be more flexible in the way you run monetary policy to take into account all this factor of uncertainty, including the structural one that I mentioned to you before. I believe in the next few months, we will see more research, more feedback from central banks about the best way forward. So we are at the beginning of this sort of review of what has been done over the last 3 years and what is the best way forward.
But just on France particularly, just pick out a couple of narratives, maybe, Max, briefly on that one. You know, what were people talking about in terms of the impact of that French election and the apparent direction of travel on the broader European picture?
Yeah, first of all, from a political perspective, from a geopolitical perspective, the way that the French election results were discussed is that this is another example of the political environment we are in, which I would summarize in terms of political polarization. If you look at the results, the first round of election, we have clearly a polarization with extreme left and extreme right, and the center being hit pretty hard. We have a similar situation across over countries. Think about the ongoing debate in the US, where political polarization is also very high. The second question was about what is the impact. And actually, there was an impact on the bond market, which was visible in terms of rising spread of French bonds over bunds. And the question, of course, is very much why the spreads are rising. And the question is very much about fiscal sustainability. As I mentioned to you before, there is a definite concern about rising public debts among central banks officials, because this has implication for monetary policy as well. And of course, a change in government in France is perceived as something which could lead to higher public debts and potentially also further confrontation with the European Commission over fiscal issues. Now, the question is, what are the long-term implications? I believe there was a debate about whether this volatility in the bond market in Europe will continue. Probably depending on the results, it could also abate. It's actually already softened a little bit in the last few days when we saw the results. But I think over the long term, the question is whether the French political situation will have an impact on the European integration pace. We know that the French-German sort of partnership is the main driver of European politics. If France enter a period of political volatility with political instability as well, with a weakened president, this is something that could in the end also have implication for Europe at large. I think we are not there yet, but definitely something to monitor very closely.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned in passing there the US, and again, just very briefly on that, Max, if I can. Obviously, we're looking, well, a Trump victory was already, I think, looking sort of the balance of probabilities. Certainly with the recent debates, it looks more likely. There's always uncertainty about Trump. He's a volatile character. But what were people talking about in terms of impacts? I mean, is there a direct impact, I don't know, an attendant impact on inflation, on, you know, equity markets, depending on who wins? Or is it more interesting to look at potential policy pivots, global tariffs, for example? What was the narrative regarding Trump?
We ask both, actually, and we ask, first of all, what do you think in the survey? I mean, what would be the impact of a Trump victory on some of the key variables concerning the US? And in a nutshell, the majority see lower US policy rates, higher US public deficit, higher US inflation rate, but a higher equity price. That's on the economic front. On the geopolitical front, which maybe is more interesting also from a global perspective, there is a view that we will have the majority of things that will be with Trump more geopolitical confrontation. A very large majority, above 90%, believe there will be further escalation in the US-China confrontation. For about 90%, the Trump victory will weaken NATO, and definitely more than 90% thinks there will be more protectionists going forward. So that's a little bit the debate, the sort of results which came out of the survey. But I think when we were in the debate and we had presentation from several experts, including a military, ex-military, and some politician or risk expert from our side, there is still a lot of uncertainty about Trump presidency impact, because we don't know a lot of things yet. We don't know about the composition of the team. We don't know who will be the vice president. If I may say, just to end, what is the most debated factor is this proposed 10% global tariff, which if introduced by Trump, and this of course will be very controversial in the US as well, and if we assume that there will be retaliation from trading partners, this could have a big impact on the global economy and the growth potential of the global economy, definitely.
Yeah. Now, just before we dig a little deeper into the survey, I did want to ask you about one, just briefly, Max, one other of the core geopolitical concerns, which I know was discussed in some depth at the conference. And that was about this idea of weaponizing reserves. What was the kind of key discussion on that one? Tell me a little bit about that. And again, you know, what are the impacts of that? One would imagine, does that threaten to sort of upset the primacy of the greenback, you know, when we look at the FX picture? Tell me how this narrative was discussed.
Yeah, definitely a growing concern among central banks. That came out clearly from the survey. A third of respondents mentioned that the weaponization of reserve is definitely a concern. And of course, we also had the news about the recent political agreement about confiscating or part of the income of the frozen reserve of the Central Bank of Russia further aggravate this concern. In terms of your first question, how does this impact the global reserve? First of all, as I mentioned, we are seeing definitely a growing demand for gold, which, as you know, it is an asset class which is difficult to subject to basically, you cannot easily impose sanction on it because it's a real asset, which is normally held by the central banks themselves. That's probably, there is a link between this rising demand of central banks and gold, also in the light of the fact that most of the buyers are in emerging markets. But the more interesting question is the one that you mentioned about the impact on the US dollar. And there is a growing view, and you read a lot in the media, that this will lead to a weakening of the dominant position of the US dollar. I would say that from the survey, it's pretty clear that there is no weakening of the US dollar so far, but that there is definitely a view that the world is moving towards a multipolar currency system. And what is interesting is that also the RMB as an international currency, the rise that we observe over the last few years has slowed down somewhat, but it's not reversed. So it might well be that once China overcomes its current economic issues, the rise of the RMB will resume. I believe in a nutshell, the impact so far in terms of the US dollar position has been limited. But I think one way to look at it is depends very much how the sanction will be used in the future. And here, my view is that it depends very much whether the US will be more unilateral in the use of sanction, or whether sanction eventually, new sanction, I mean, against central banks and reserve, will be introduced more as a part of an international coalition. I think this will make a big difference. So US dollar is still strong. But of course, the outlook is becoming a little bit more uncertain given these ongoing geopolitical developments.
Well, gents, look, just as we wrap up, let's talk a little bit then about what the reserve managers had to say about what this means for investment strategy. I always think it's super interesting to get the backdrop and then look at the actual impact of that on positive moves going forwards. What do they have to say about adaptation? You know, lots of uncertainty in lots of different areas that you've described, Max. What's the impact in terms of strategic pivots going forwards?
Yeah, I pass the floor to Philip, my colleague, who has been looking into this very closely. Please, Philip.
I mean, in general, I think we can say when it comes to asset allocation, that the trend towards more diversification of reserves is now, it's now continuing again. There was a pause in 2022, 2023, and it's quite interesting. We're talking all about this stuff about geopolitics, and we see the reaction. Yes, reserve managers are buying a bit more government bonds, a bit more gold, but they are not really, you don't see these fundamental changes in asset allocation. You can really say reserve managers, they remain well diversified across public markets. Again, government bonds, in particular green bonds, are very much in demand. And also equities and risk assets are very much still in demand. I would maybe add one interesting additional piece is one of the most surprising results in the survey was that that we see a relatively high share of central banks that are now really considering moving the passive strategies back into active, which is now a value that stands at 38%. And this is really, we had it at 23% last year, 11% 2 years ago. So there's really something going on here. There's really, and we put this in this context of, what we already talked a lot about in the past, that with quantitative easing, you had this, the tide lifts all boats environment. But now with the end of QE and also probably with more diversification into emerging markets, really see this trend in active management coming back.
We see an evolution in diversification. Diversification in the last 2-3 decades has been largely a search for yield because of the low yield environment. Now, fixed income can provide very good returns, which means that central banks can meet their primary objective, which is capital protection, basically via fixed income. But once you diversified and you move across different asset classes, you start to see the benefits of this diversification, which is actually what we call sometimes in the jargon a free lunch for investor. I think central banks learn that. That's exactly what Philip was saying when we do not see a reversal in this trend. For instance, they stick to their equity allocation and they continue to look at for better diversification. The evolution in diversification is that given the uncertainty still surrounding the global economy and the geopolitics, they are searching for a better allocation across regions, countries, and currency. And I think this is the interesting trend going forward. And I think central banks are very active on that.
Well, look, Max, just to wrap things up then, a really interesting section in the piece this year on the future of international financial architecture. And this was really arresting. Maybe just unpack that for us very briefly, just to wrap things up.
Absolutely. So this is, I think, a very important question. And let me start with the fact that if you look at the geopolitical situation, we are definitely what I would say a transition phase. Basically, the world is going through moving from the existing global order, which has been prevailing for since the post-war period, definitely to something new. And this is already observable in the structure of the global economy. Think about the rise of China and the emerging market, which now account for the lion's share of the global economy. But if you look at the global financial architecture, actually it's not changed very much. Just think about the central role of the US dollar in the global financial system, the role of the IMF and the World Bank, which are still in terms of governance exactly as they've been for many decades. So that we thought that given the fact that we are at the 80th anniversary of Bretton Woods, it was a good opportunity to ask a few questions about this aspect. And what came out from the survey is very interesting. First of all, the fact that the financial system has been pretty resilient to shock so far. So there is a recognition that thanks to better regulation, et cetera, the financial system is a little bit more resilient. But then when you ask about whether the current structure of the global financial system and the so-called Bretton Woods system can deal with the challenge that we have at the moment, the majority thinks that this is not the case and that reforms are needed in order to deal with the challenge of the future. And then we ask, where should this reform focus on? And here there was a clear view from the central bank official that there is a need for more multilateral cooperation. And this is something that I think is very, very important, because I would say that we can say that multilateralism at the moment is probably at a low point in history. And I believe that central banks, they're very eager to maintain this level of cooperation as high as possible and think about involving more emerging markets to have a stronger presence of China, for instance, in the IMF and other international institutions. So there is definitely a demand for more multilateralism in the current volatile geopolitical context. Final point, because it's very much debated, is about the impact of digitization and the so-called disruptive technology. Many observers see this as a threat in terms, for instance, of stability. Instead, it's very interesting to see that from the survey, the view of the majority is that this technology, this technological development provide more opportunities than challenge. So in a nutshell, more multilateralism, embracing technological disruption in order to make the global financial system more in line with the structure of the real economy and more resilient and capable of dealing with future challenge.
Max Castelli bringing us to the end of this edition of The Bulletin with UBS. You can listen again and explore more at monocle.com. You can also follow the show wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to discover more and find out how UBS can help you by visiting ubs.com. I'm Tom Edwards. Thanks for listening.